Thank you for tuning in. We'll get to your program right after this short word from our sponsor.
In your company, a challenge? Are you battling turnover and struggling to draw key talent? Is your team not performing at the level you want? Problems present themselves through conflict, miscommunication, creative differences, unclear expectations, and motivational issues. ARC Integrated is here to address these challenges through executive coaching and customized interactive trainings. Create lasting positive change that will improve your bottom line and create a culture that attracts talent and reduces turnover by going to arcintegrated.com. That's arcintegrated.com.
How does an economy that is more mindful and less mindless become a reality? Welcome to the Mindful Marketplace. I'm your host, Joel Skeen, and I'm happy to welcome you to the show where we ask experts, entrepreneurs, investors, and industry leaders for their perspectives on how all of us can, on every level, do our part to help create a more mindful marketplace.
I'm really grateful to get to be here with you all today. I'm really grateful to get to host a show at all here on bizradio.us. And I want to especially thank Matt Matan for creating this network and mentoring me along the way. I've got a lot to learn. And I also want to thank Aaron Matan for being just about the best producer anyone could ask for. I also want to thank you, the listener, for gifting me with the most valuable thing that you own, which is your time. There are millions of content options that you could be listening to right now, and the fact that you choose to spend that time with me is an honor and a privilege, and I don't take it lightly. It's a responsibility for me to bring the highest quality show to you that I can each and every week. I want to talk directly with you today because more and more, it seems like the world and the economy and the business community and things locally here where I live in Western North Carolina, along with the rest of the country, are changing. And changing fast. I would argue probably changing faster than they ever have. You know, if you put someone from 100 years ago in, let's say, 1922, into a proverbial DeLorean equipped with a flux capacitor and pumped it full of 1.21 gigawatts of electricity to bring them into the year 2022, it's possible that the amount of sudden change they would experience would drive them completely and incoherently mad. I genuinely don't think the human brain could process it all at once. And not only are things changing, but that rate of change is growing exponentially. Like, consider how far back from 1922 would you have to go to equal the same amount of change that we've experienced just in the last century. You'd probably have to go back like 600 or 800 years. You'd have to stick a middle-aged serf into a time machine and bring them into the early 20th century just to have a similar effect. And if you went back even further before that, well, next you'd have to go back thousands of years to see the same amount of change in human society that would equal what we've experienced in just the last 100 years. And it seems to me that the faster things change, the easier it is to get lost, and the more difficult it is to adapt and to keep up. We as human beings aren't used to it. We get so caught up in just trying to orient ourselves that we get lost in the trees and miss the forest. So in order to navigate that kind of change, I believe we need to be more diligent than ever in understanding the principles that guide human life and our own personal philosophy that helps us navigate these uncharted waters. A mentor of mine once told me that if you're going to have a good business, you have to know your philosophy. You have to find solid ground in shifting environments, a ruler of sorts to measure yourself and your business against, to know if you're making a measurable amount of progress in a reasonable amount of time towards your goals. And I think that's good advice. I want to talk with you all today about one philosophy that keeps coming up with the guests on my show, and that I believe to be one of the most important guiding forces in creating a more mindful marketplace for all of us. That philosophy can be stated most simply as your dollar is your vote. Now, this isn't a show about voting. And that's not to say that I and the business owners, organizational leaders, and entrepreneurs who come on the show don't have their own political views. But I, for one, have become so disillusioned by our country's two-party system that it just doesn't even seem worth talking much about, or for that matter, paying that much attention to. You know, throughout my life, I've identified as a conservative and as a liberal, but the older I get, and I do hope to keep getting older, the less that debate interests me and it seems somewhat like arguing over which brand of cola you drink. You know, I remember 20 years ago, it was common to hear that the two parties referred to as Pepsi and Coke because they were just so similar. And I actually think that's one of the few things that hasn't changed very much since then. What has changed is an onslaught of messaging from, you know, 24-hour news networks, also a manipulation of truth just for emotional responses from these media sources who only care about more and more clicks, and a siloing of human beings by internet echo chambers that lead intelligent and reasonable people just like you and me to believe that Coke can do no wrong and that Pepsi will destroy everything you hold dear. But I think deep down that this is all a game being played, we know it, by a small number of very powerful people that keeps the rest of us, well, distracted while they, like clockwork, just kind of siphon what little we have left for themselves. I guess what this rant is getting at is that while I still do vote, it sure does feel like every year it does less and less. You know, that poll at the ballot box seems less and less useful in making the lives of my family, my friends, and my community any better. And it's easy to lose hope, but I haven't. And that's because the philosophy I mentioned earlier, echoed by nearly every guest who has come on the Mindful Marketplace, that your dollar is your vote. And it's more powerful than your vote. And I couldn't agree more. We all know that it's good to spend your money locally. But today I want to dive deeper into a topic that's an emerging and exciting field of finance that takes that idea to the next level: local investing. Now, local investing isn't new. It's actually a very old idea. In the earlier parts of the American economy, it was more common to invest your money into a local business, farm, or even family members' real estate than it was to send your money up to Wall Street. Local investors today seek to maximize both their social rate of return as well as their financial one. Local businesses, after all, are the key to economic development, and investing your money where you live creates rootedness and contributes to the quality of life for everyone involved. But as we said, things have changed a lot over the last 100 years, and especially in the last 50 years, there's been a huge consolidation of banks, and investment money has been confined mostly to retirement accounts provided and controlled by your employer. And the options for how those funds get invested are, to put it mildly, limited. You usually pick from one of a handful of mutual funds that serve as a giant subsidy for Wall Street. And while some options, especially known as ESG funds, do exist, they don't actually shift capital towards your community. They simply cut out a few of the companies that cause the biggest amount of damage to the environment. It's a small gesture towards value-based investing, and even that is being met with fierce resistance by Wall Street and its political allies. The result? While small independent businesses make up half of our country's GDP and two-thirds of the new jobs created, less than 1% of retirement savings gets invested locally. I'm going to quote Michael Schumann. He's an economist and author of a few books called Local Dollars, Local Cents, Put Your Money Where Your Life Is, and others. He says, "What would be the impact if Americans shifted 60% of their investments into local businesses? A shift of this magnitude would mean that every community in the United States would have at least $100,000 more capital to invest in local businesses for every resident living in it. If you lived in a small town of 10,000 people, that could mean $1 billion more of capital to regenerate your economy. If you lived in a small city with 100,000 people, you would have $10 billion more. It's hard to imagine any policy or governmental program that could deliver even a tiny fraction of the potential impacts of residents changing their investment choices." Michael Schumann offers 10 different strategies that anyone can get started on to begin their journey of investing locally. And if you want to learn more, I cannot recommend his most recent book, Put Your Money Where Your Life Is, enough. It will expand your idea of what an investment is and what it can be. I'm going to briefly go over his 10 strategies to give you an idea of how you can vote with your dollar for the kind of future that you want to see. All right, strategy number one: invest in yourself by paying off credit cards. Schumann says that from a community economic perspective, credit cards are public enemy number one. Their alluring and addictive quality of buy now, pay later, and the fact that more and more people are having to turn to credit cards and other high interest lenders just to meet their basic needs has created a personal financial crisis. Interest on credit cards is currently averaging 17%, which means that, because that's the average, millions of Americans are paying more like a ridiculous interest rate of 25 to 30%. If you're currently paying about 20% interest on a credit card, that's money that you can't invest, let alone invest locally. It makes no sense for someone to try to make 5% or 8% on the stock market with your right hand while you're paying out 20% with your left. The message is clear. If you have credit card debt, paying it off should be your first investment priority. Strategy number two, invest in your family's future. Schumann gives this example. He says, if your child has racked up unsustainable credit card debt of $20,000, make her a deal. I'll buy out your credit card and pay it off, and you can pay me the $20 at an interest rate of 5% per year. You get a great new source of income, and your child gets a new lease on life. And why stop with credit cards? You know, if a family member has student loans for 7%, pay it off immediately and have her pay you back the amount at 5%. An estimated 44 million young Americans, including two-thirds of all recent college graduates, have a total of $1.5 trillion of student debt. They're typically paying interest rates between 5 and, you know, in between 7 and 8%. Although millions are in default paying even more. This is a huge opportunity to make money and to keep thousands of your kids' dollars out of Wall Street. Strategy number three, invest in a home. So personally, most of the clients that I see for help with financial services are mortgage holders. And for most Americans, the largest expense that they have on a month-to-month basis is their housing cost. And while the housing market can at times seem inflated and mortgage rates often cost more in interest than what meets the eye, buying a home will almost always be a better long-term investment than renting because it is inherently about investing, not just spending. If you compare a family that rents and invests extra money into the stock market versus a family that uses the same money to invest in a home, the home buyer's monthly payment is doing two things at once. It's covering not only a primary living cost, but it's also investing in the future. The person who's renting and investing, their money is being split and therefore used pretty inefficiently. The equity built in a home also becomes an asset that can exceed many families' investment accounts. In addition, there's tax deductions on mortgage interest that further amplify this effect. Lastly, Schumann adds that if you decide to become a homeowner, you can increase your social rate of return further by getting your mortgage at a community bank or credit union. You know, as we've talked about on this show before, credit unions and local banks keep your money in your community in ways that the big banks just don't. Strategy number four, invest in yourself by paying down that mortgage faster. So if you already have a mortgage and you're out of credit card debt, first of all, congratulations. If you have extra money, it'd probably make sense to start investing in Wall Street, right? Well, Schumann says that under most reasonable assumptions, you will actually get a higher rate of return simply by using extra money to pay down your mortgage more quickly. This may go against some things that you've heard, but according to Schumann, once you take a deeper dive into the numbers and factor in market losses, fees, and taxes on your investment gains that you would face investing Wall Street, and contrast that to the tax advantage, interest savings, and equity growth of your property, paying down your mortgage actually gives you a similar, if not better, rate of return than funding big companies on Wall Street. All right, I want to take a quick break from these strategies for a second and point out that so far in the book on local investing, the first four strategies are about eliminating debt. And it makes sense to me. Investing is about using today's money for the future. But debt chains today's money to your past. And it's nearly impossible to walk towards a future if your feet are stuck in the mud of the past. A dollar cannot serve two masters at the same time. One of the most common things I hear from people is that they would love to make a bigger positive social impact with their spending and investment money, but they just can't afford to. Why? In large part because the average American household spends 34% of their gross income on interest on their debt. Everyone wants to be free from debt, but few people know how to maximize their payoffs most efficiently for their unique situation. So at my agency, we are dedicated to educating families on the various strategies for debt elimination that have proven effective for decades. Then, using an exclusive debt-free life software developed in Asheville, North Carolina, we can create a personalized debt elimination report and provide clear information on how to eliminate debt faster and save interest without spending any additional money. Most families are able to get out of debt in half the time or better without spending anything extra monthly. What I would encourage you to do is to think about these three questions if you want to get out of debt. How would freedom from debt change your community? How would it change your family's future? And what would freedom from debt allow you to do? If you want to find out, go visit mindfulmarketplaceshow.com and click on the link that says eliminate debt. All right, back to the strategies. Strategy number five, invest in cutting your daily bills. So remember when I said that we're going to expand your idea of what an investment can be? This right here is a great example. According to the annual Consumer Expenditure Survey, the typical family spends about $3,800 per year on utilities. Schumann asked the following question. Can you get a higher rate of return through the purchase of efficiency measures and renewable energy devices than you would by conventionally investing on Wall Street? He says absolutely. Investing in energy-efficient measures such as better lighting, insulation, windows, and solar panels do two things. First, they increase the value of your home, growing your asset and your borrowing power, and they also save you money monthly, which over the course of a decade can give you a similar, if not better, return on your dollar than Wall Street would. Strategy number six, invest in your co-op. So member-owned co-ops are sort of the OG of local grassroots investing because membership in a co-op has never been considered a security by the SEC. Common co-ops include credit unions, electric utility co-ops, and grocery co-ops. But there are many more. There's about 30,000 co-ops across the country in various industries, like even burial services and outdoor recreational equipment. Ever heard of REI? They're actually a co-op that gives its members an ownership stake and a rate of return through a dividend. Now, you won't get rich off of a co-op membership, but you're already spending money on these basic needs. Why not have your dollar do two things at once? You get a financial ROI through dividends, as well as the social return of having these community-based companies in your hometown. I would also add community-supported agriculture, or CSAs, into this category as well. If you want to learn more about that, go back and listen to my episode with Jamie Ager of Hickory Nut Gap Farms. All right, strategy number seven, invest in your favorite local business. So investing locally has for decades only been accessible to what's called accredited investors. All this means is that an individual makes over $200,000 a year in income. If you don't make over $200,000 a year, you have had to go through an advisor who almost certainly is focused solely on Wall Street. But that is changing throughout the country. Small independent businesses are able to use tools like crowdfunding or direct public offerings, known as DPOs, where a company can sell shares directly to the public. And thanks to the Jobs Act, a company can now raise up to $1,070,000 from any investor, not just accredited ones. Now, just like with any investment, it's important to do your due diligence and understand the risks, regulations, and possible returns. It's outside of the scope of this episode to get into all those details here, so if you want to begin investing locally in this way, you should grab a copy of Put Your Money Where Your Life Is and read for yourself. Strategy number eight, invest in your favorite nonprofit or place of worship. So don't forget that nonprofits need capital too. They take out loans and pay interest as well. Why not have that ROI go to you and your community rather than a big bank? Schumann highlights this example. Bellwether Housing, a nonprofit based in Seattle, recently made a crowdfunding offering to help its campaign to build 750 new affordable apartments in a region that's known for skyrocketing property values and growing legions of homeless people. These 750 homes support an estimated 2,400 residents, including preschool teachers, students, retirees, bartenders, small business owners, musicians, orderlies, and young children. Every home was near public transit with access to jobs, schools, and community resources. It's better for families, our community, and the environment when people can afford to live near where they work. Investors receive a promissory note paying 2% per year with quarterly payments. So in that case, investors were receiving a small financial ROI, but they were receiving a big social one. Strategy number 9, invest in local real estate. A growing number of investors are actually shifting their investments from businesses to land, buildings, and housing. Investing in local real estate means investing in something tangible, like a house, apartment building, or commercial space in your own community, rather than the more illusory market. It also is seen by many investors as a more stable investment. You know, while many businesses, particularly startups, could crash, burn, go completely out of business, and not only lose all their money, but all their investors' money as well, very few real estate ventures would ever completely lose everything. You may be thinking that you need to be, you know, well on your way to becoming some sort of tycoon before you could invest in real estate, but there are actually a lot of ways that you can start small or even pool your investment money with other local real estate investors. One local group that I want to highlight to our region here that provides a lot of education and resources is the Carolina Real Estate Investors Association. I recommend looking them up. Strategy number 10, invest in local government projects. So, do you like the idea of being able to invest in your town's infrastructure? Roads, bike lanes, bridges, ports, convention centers, parks, and museums? Take a look at municipal bonds. Local governments borrow money all the time, especially for expensive capital projects. A huge advantage to municipal bonds is that federal law makes the gains on many of them tax-free, which can help offset a possible lower rate of return. Schumann cites this example. In 2015, a company called Neighborly introduced the concept of civic microbonds to lower the minimum denomination for investors. For the next 4 years, it worked with cities, especially smaller ones, to help them issue bonds that could be marketed directly to residents. If your city wanted to upgrade the zoo, for example, it could issue bonds for resident purchase. Increasingly, cities are funding intriguing solar energy or storm weather management projects through grassroots investing. And for cities that have limited cash and have many residents who are reluctant to pay more in taxes, this opens up a whole new potential revenue stream. All right, I know that was a lot, and I hope this rundown of local investment strategies has helped expand your perspective not just on how you can invest locally, but also on what an investment can be in your world, your community, your family, and even investing and growing yourself. I started this episode by saying that it's important to stick to your philosophy. As we work to better vote with our dollars, I hold this counterintuitive yet simple philosophy that helping others is good for me and growing myself is good for others. I want to thank you for your time, and I want to encourage you to take care of yourself and take care of someone else.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.